Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today's guest is two guests, Noah Griffin, who has done Love Letters with us before, and Meredith Browning, who has done Love Letters with us before, and they are here today as a team, and I'm going to just ask you, well, just for a minute, I want to say that today's subject is so connected to love letters because of the manner of expression, would you say?
Absolutely.
Okay, so introduce yourself and tell a little bit about who you are in this regard, and then you.
Well, I'm Noah Griffin, and I've been a lifelong aficionado of Cole Porter. And because of that, we do Cole Porter concerts. And after the last one, it occurred to us to get in touch with the Cole Porter Society. Scouring the internet and doing all the research we could, we found out that there was no Cole Porter Society.
Oh, I wondered what you meant, because I thought there was none when you said you were going to look into it.
Ah. And the irony of it was, 45 years ago when I was in law school at Harvard, the dean sent me down to Cole Porter's law firm, because he had gone to Harvard Law.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He went to Harvard Law for a year.
And so you're really kindred souls.
Well, you look at our grades the first year, we're absolutely kindred souls.
Because when you got your degree, you realized, as did your grandfather, that you didn't want to be a lawyer.
Well, I always kind of knew that, and it just the opportunity arose.
Okay, so we want to say that you're a singer.
I am a singer. I've been a singer since I was 7 years old in San Francisco Boys Chorus, and I branched out with various groups, sang on my own, and was thinking at the end of law school to going into music full time.
Which is what you do, and you perform all around. I've had the pleasure, myself. Yes. Oh, well, he's a wonderful singer.
Well, thank you. Okay. And the songs that I love to do in terms of love letters are Cole Porter songs because they have a sense of musical literacy and a vocabulary that kids don't have today.
Okay.
And,
I want to talk about that more.
Okay.
Because I think that's... talk about your role here, Meredith.
My role here is to provide the structure and the collaboration for doing the work that we do at the Cole Porter Society.
So you're just definitely a working team here.
We are. Noah is the visionary and the creative, I would say the creative force, and I am the person who brings it all together and makes it happen.
And that's just like real life?
That's like real life.
Yes, okay. And you have your own entertainment background. You have your own definite talents and...
Yes, I grew up in a house that was full of music. My mother was a singer. She was in the first off-Broadway launch of Oklahoma.
I remember that, yeah.
She sang around the country, and my godfather is Johnny Ray.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah. So I always had music in my background, yes. Although I pursued businesses as I was growing up. So I ran business units for high-tech publications, both online and offline.
Are you glad to be brought back into this?
Oh, I am. And I'm so familiar with launches. That's all I used to
course,
do. I used to be a launch baby. Take something from nothing and make it into something grand. So to be able to do it in music is just like, feels like I've come full circle.
Okay, so let's talk about why Cole Porter speaks to you so well. Because we were talking the other day that at some point our song went from Some Enchanted Evening to Why Don't We Do It in the Road. What happened?
Well,
and what's lost?
I think society changed, and actually there was more of a melding of it in the 50s and 60s when I grew up, in the sense that on your top 40 hits, you could have Ferranti and Teicher, and Elvis and the Coasters in the same top 40. So people got a sense of where the music came from. And you could go back on Saturday afternoons or afternoons when you stay home from school and see the old movies and hear.
But Elvis Presley was still basically romantic.
In some of his, but it was a real departure from what had gone before. Mm-hmm. It was not Gershwin. It was not Berlin. It was not Rodgers and Hart. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly not Cole Porter. Even Cole Porter was not Cole Porter in the 20s because it was Moon, June, and Spoon. And people like Elsa Manchester said to him, you know, you've got to stay where you are because the society will come up to meet you. And indeed it did. And a lot of the romantic songs and the way people express themselves was a part of their emotional vocabulary so they could relate to each other in a way that's not existent with the kids today. Now, I'm not saying that they won't want to be able to relate to each other that way as they mature.
But what will bring that about if they don't get into the habit?
That's absolutely right. So they have to have the seed planted so they know where this music was, who brought it about, and that it is accessible and available to them.
So you want to bring cleverness back in some way.
Wit, sophistication, yes. Cleverness, mischievousness, flirtation in the music, not just blunt coarseness.
Uh-huh, flirtation, not coarseness. Okay. And what is this, how is this society going to work, the Cole Porter Society? Is it launched yet, Meredith?
Yes, it has launched. We're in the very beginning stages of launching it. We have a joint fundraiser on the 28th of this month with Ross Valley Players, who came to us and asked us if we would do this with them.
And we're hoping that people contribute, because there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Okay. And what will you do once you're launched? I mean, as a group or as an entertainer,
we are taking Cole Porter into the schools. We're having concerts and contests where kids can learn a Cole Porter song, and by virtue of being the winner from their school, come together at places like, well, major venues around the Bay Area, and the winner will receive a scholarship.
And the winner will be performing.
The winner will be performing.
So you're looking for musical ability as well as...
Right. We performed with a wonderful gal this last week. Sophia, her name is escaping me.
She goes by one name, actually, Sophia. That's how she was introduced at this last performance that we saw.
And we've asked her to be a part of our program, as my 16-year-old daughter was a part of my first Cole Porter program, and I have a recording of her. And because her school, the Mount Tam School, put on Anything Goes, she did Anything Goes with me as a duet, and it was wonderful.
And you feel that the music and lyrics are infectious enough that people will be drawn back?
I think so. If the kids don't know about the music, they will. It's almost like finding a Paul Laurence Dunbar rap, 1906, that kids would be absolutely shocked that that genre existed.
Talk for a minute, because I remember coming to see you, which is actually where I met you, Meredith, and you did the Sammy Davis Jr. concert in San Francisco. And I was struck by the fact, and have been in our friendship ever since, that you're a musician and a singer and a performer, but somehow based on the fact that you are a history teacher.
You know, before I do a Cole Porter show, I have 5 books in them. I reread every one of the 5 books.
Well, so you did that with Sammy Davis Jr.
I did that with Sammy.
In between songs, you talked about the times.
And I think it's so important. I don't think you can talk about the individual without the times. And if people can relate to those times based upon what they're going through now, because history is cyclical. And it also personalizes the story.
Right.
You know, a lot of what Cole Porter had to go through, even though he was special in the sense that he was rich and very talented, were challenges. I mean, he had to overcome his accident. He had to overcome him being gay.
No, why don't you tell us about this? Tell us more about Cole Porter.
Well, he was born to a very wealthy grandfather, basically. His father was a pharmacist, but the grandfather was the one that supported Cole and had the money and sent him to Worcester Academy, sent him to Yale, where he distinguished himself as a songwriter. And he married a very wealthy woman, even though he was gay. She had been abused in her first marriage, and it was a perfect situation for them.
And for those of you who want to know more about this, is the movie De Lovely accurate?
The movie is certainly much more accurate than Night and Day, where Cary Grant plays in 1948. It's very accurate. Very accurate. And I think it could probably not have been made before now. Mm-hmm. But it shows you some of the challenges that he had. The riding accident that he had in 1937 crushed both of his legs. People thought he was through. He wasn't. He was a very courageous and brave. He named both of his legs, which were crushed, one Geraldine and one Josephine. Josephine's acting up today. Geraldine's acting well. But he just soldiered right through and had his biggest success after the accident, which was Kiss Me, Kate. Mm. But so many facets to his character and who he was, which makes him a more appealing person and also makes people
those?
Want to. Courageous, mischievous, highly intelligent, very courteous individual. When he'd go hear somebody sing and they were singing his songs and they didn't like it, he would just kind of slip out the side.
Did people take to him right away?
Yes, they did, in the sense that they knew they were in the midst of somebody who was great, and yet he was humble in his own courteous way. Although, from time to time, people would think of him as being maybe supercilious, but that was where they came from. Mm-hmm. He was very unfailingly polite.
What happens every 10 years to make what people want in music so different, such jarring differences?
Well, I think part of it is where you are. If you're in your 18 to 23, you want that hard rock kind of music. From 23 to 30, it settles out a little bit more. From 35 on, you want something that is a little matches your lifestyle, that slows down a little bit more. That
you're saying the raucous leaves you?
I think it leaves you a little bit, for sure. I think you broaden your tastes for mm-hmm. sure as you slow down. Maybe the music slows down. Maybe the way you want to express yourself is different than the way you want to express yourself.
Oh, okay. So talk about the way you want to express yourself, because he was clever.
Well, if you're literate at all, if you like words at all, mm-hmm. If you like wordplay, if you like internal rhyme,
if
you like
poetry.
I was going
to say, the internal rhyme is a big, yes.
He was a big fan of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Oh, I was just going to say, the other team there, that yeah. internal rhyme, that was, it's so satisfying, because we are creatures of rhythm.
That's absolutely right.
We are born to it.
That's why I don't particularly care for poetry that doesn't rhyme. I mean, mm-hmm. if it rhymes, mm-hmm. I can relate to it, mm-hmm. I mean, children can relate to
it. Well, but modern poetry that doesn't rhyme, I don't know really what's called poetry and what isn't, and there's certainly a rhythm to it, but they're very, very short stories.
Yeah,
they're not what we think about when we think about Thomas Hardy. And
well, it is said to the novelist, every chapter is important to the short story writer, every paragraph to the poet, every word. I think every word to Cole Porter was important. If you listen to his songs with great care and detail, he does not... He gets away from the cliché. He does not like the cliché. Mm-hmm. He will always go out of his way mm-hmm. to avoid it and put something different
out of
that
his
you
way
don't
to
expect.
Avoid the cliché, yes.
Just like he went out of his way to avoid boredom. His whole life was erased from boredom.
Oh, is that right?
The ennui, as he called it.
Yeah, so he did talk about that.
Very much so.
How did it attack him?
Well, he would have to get up and go someplace. They'd have to take a trip around the world on a cruise to compose. He would go to the Andes when
So it was an internal pull. I mean, it wasn't that his life was actually boring.
No, his life was anything but boring.
Right, right.
We should all be so bored.
How did he, I mean, I don't know if you know this or anybody knows this, but being gay and married at that time, mm-hmm. how did that marriage sustain itself?
They had a mutual regard and affection and respect mm-hmm. for each other.
And love is love.
Love is love.
Yes.
And what he did, as long as he was discreet about it, was just fine with her. She was proud of him. Mm-hmm. She pushed him to who he was. He was one of her friends said he was just a mess in terms of his organization before they met. And he was just set in his ways once they met. But I think what happened when he got to Hollywood in mm-hmm. the 30s, he sort of flamed out a little bit. And
which means what?
He was much more less discreet about who he was in his mm-hmm. life. And at that point, she felt it was being disrespectful, and she was about to leave him. And when the accident happened, she got back with him, mm-hmm. and the mother never left, and they decided that he was not going to have the amputation that the doctor suggested. And in fact, he had 33 operations. And when they
How
both,
many?
33 operations.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
When they both wound up passing on, and the doctor said, I can't delay this any longer, mm-hmm. and they cut off the leg, he never wrote another note and wondered what had gone before.
Oh.
So they knew that something would
what do you think?
Escape in him if he didn't feel like he was whole.
Really? Yeah. And there was that sense of not being whole because you have lost a leg?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And if you look at some of his songs, when he writes, I Concentrate on You, mm-hmm. when fortune cries, nay, nay to me, and people declare you're through, that's the horse.
What do you mean? Oh,
the
nay,
play
nay.
On words. Uh-huh, nay, nay uh-huh. to me, and
Bing,
people declare
yes,
you're through.
Yes. So what are your favorite Cole Porter songs?
My absolute all-time favorite is DeLovely from Red Hot and Blue, 1936, mm-hmm. with Ethel Merman, Jimmy Durante, and Bob Hope. Bob Hope and Ethel Merman debuted the song. And 3 weeks ago at the Antiquarian Book Fair, I got an opportunity to hold Linda Porter's copy of Red Hot and Blue, mm-hmm. from which the song DeLovely comes, a mere $7,500. But it was just great to hold something that both of my heroes held.
Oh, okay. Can we make a little shift for a second?
Okay.
Talk about love letters?
Okay.
Yes. That is, to me, I mean, you just hit right on it. That is one of the biggest gifts of an actual handwritten love letter, that you are holding something that has felt the touch of another person's hand. It's a physical
yes.
business.
Psychometry is what some people have the gift of, which you can hold something and actually feel its provenance.
Oh, yes.
There are people
that's
that can
what,
do that.
I think most people have that sense when it comes to getting a love letter. You know, it's probably felt the touch of somebody's lips or been held to their heart. So that's wonderful that you had that experience.
Oh, yeah. For another composer, there was a libretto of Porgy and Bess signed by Ira, George, mm-hmm. Reuben Mamillion, and DeBose Hayward, all of which were intimately connected with Porgy and Bess. Just to touch something I know they touched.
Yes. And handwriting is king.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm so glad you mentioned that. All right, let's go back to what you, how you're going to do this. I mean, how do people join the Cole Porter Society?
Well, they go on our website.
Okay, so there's the point. Thank you. Say it slowly and then spell it. Would you, Meredith?
www.noahgriffin.com. The Cole Porter page will come up immediately on that website.
And what will that tell you about? Will that tell you about performances? Will that...
It will. It will also tell you why we're doing what we're doing and how we're doing it.
And again, kind of restate that. You want to bring back a sense of elegance somewhere where it's been lost?
Yes, to raise the musical awareness and appreciation of Cole Porter, his legacy and his music.
And the genre. I mean, we wouldn't be displeased if all of a sudden they discovered Rodgers and Hart and they discovered Irving Berlin.
It's a gateway drug.
Ellington.
Oh, okay, good. Perfect. Yes.
I've got you under my skin.
It's a little joint.
That's right.
Just to get into the bigger place. Okay. So it's kind of an overall something that you would like to bring back because you feel, I mean, I agree. I feel the world is suffering somewhat with lack of ability because I think if you can't express yourself, never mind elegantly, but really well and to the point, you suffer for it, and I think you can't help but taking to fists if you can't get your idea across.
Well, if I can move to from music to one of your fields, dance. My parents made me go to Kitchen's Dance School out at 20th and Darivelle when I was in the 8th grade.
Why?
And we learned to swing dance, and we learned foxtrot and various things. Now, I didn't have much use for them when I was in high school, but then by the time I got to college, you had kids from all different parts of the country.
Oh, because people were doing what when you were in high school?
They were doing the twist, they were doing
that's even later.
Jerk. But the jitterbug was what we kind of learned. It's the outgrowth of the swing, the Lindy Hop from 1927, and that has done put me in good stead as an adult, knowing at least how to do it and work my way around a dance floor.
And what about you in a dance floor?
I did freestanding dance where nobody actually held each other.
That's okay.
Mashed potatoes. American bandstand kinds of things.
Sure.
Because that was my era. I'm sorry to say.
But even bandstand is, they still in the Slow Records dance close, and it was a little bit better. And the swing dance was better than what a lot of the kids have now where they just completely dance
But
apart.
Here's the thing. I was 19 before I had my first date, so I never went to any of those dances. I was the one that played the records.
Oh, yes,
everybody else
I did.
Danced. Yeah.
So you wouldn't sit on the other side, stand on the other side of the gym, and the boys have to come over the way.
Yeah, they wouldn't come over to me. I was taller than everybody in the world.
And that's why you didn't have a date till you were 19?
That's right.
That's hard to believe. You're so gorgeous.
Well, thank you. I was
My
so
goodness.
Grateful I married him.
Oh, okay. That's a whole other thing.
That's a whole other story.
Oh, gratitude where
Back
we shouldn't
to
have to.
Back to the Cole Porter Society.
Yes, but gratitude where we shouldn't have to feel it is worth mentioning. Okay. All right. So back to the Cole Porter Society. You want to do things like home concerts? And, I mean, how do you want to present this to the world? How will you?
Home concerts, concerts so we can raise funds to be able to go into the schools and individual classes, assemblies.
Oh, okay,
assemblies.
So then here's the teacher talking. So your goal is to go into the schools and revive it that way.
Right, and by virtue of the contest that we have in the schools,
we can
acquaint people with who he is, what his music was. Each person can have a particular song that they want to present. And then as they are presenting the songs, the school is learning what they're doing at the same time. When I was learning my poetry, I would have my children test me on the poems. And
no,
so
what do you mean when you were learning
If I was learning Paul Revere's Ride or
Gray's
Elegy. As an adult.
For your own performances.
And I would get to a point where I'd make one error. Oh, Dad, start at the beginning. You made an error. Well, but they didn't realize they were learning the poem, too. So all of those children who hear their classmates learn the Cole Porter songs, rehearse them, have the various, I'm tapping my finger, have the contests are learning Cole Porter
and
as well.
And we learned, we learn history through this, I think, so much better than the way a lot of us were taught. I don't know how they teach it now, but names, dates, and...
Stories.
Stories and music, because what you can learn that in an easily perceptible beat, there's no end to it. I mean, I think When I was growing up, we all had to learn the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
And I think everybody knows that. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, you know, there was a game show which was like Name That Tune, mm-hmm. and people would just give the rhythm, I think, wasn't there?
Interesting. Interesting.
And you'd have to come. It's so easy. It's so easy.
Well, who doesn't remember? Dun, 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 dun.
Right. But you can do, I mean, so much more than that, because the rhythm of it is what gets into us. So, of course, while you were learning it, they were learning it.
Do you know where that came from?
Dun, what? Dun, 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 dun. No, tell us.
Shave and a haircut. Two
bits. Yes. Well, I know where da-da came from. Do you know where that came from?
Da-da.
Da-da. Like a victorious little.
Yeah, well, no.
I saw a documentary. I don't remember the man's name. It was an older fellow musician. And apparently, he came up with that. Nobody knows who he is. But it came up in conversation. He said, well, da-da, that's mine.
I hope he gets royalties.
Because I can't get
to be a wealthy man.
That's right.
Do you think it'll come to be that some of these musicals will be brought back? I mean, people seem to love revivals.
Well,
we've got theaters all over.
Mount Tam School, where my children went, they did Anything Goes, and
it
was wonderful.
That.
And they also did My Fair Lady without dropping a line. Eighth graders, kids will live up or down mm-hmm. to your level of expectation.
Oh, everyone will. Expectations are critical in life. That's a whole other issue for me.
So
when you treat people like they can't.
And Miss Sophia, one of the things that she asked to do was The Lovely, which happened to be my song.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew it. You know, all five verses, which is really impressive.
And Sophia is 11 years old.
Oh, is that right? What did
yeah.
you say? Oh, talk
Delmar
about
School.
This.
Well, I did a program at the St. Francis Yacht Club,
mm-hmm.
Pre-Valentine's program, and there she was. She'd gone to the same school that my older boys had gone. And she opened up her mouth and she sang, Don't Rain on My Parade, a la Barbara Streisand.
And you have never, huh?
It was just wonderful.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Just wonderful. So I talked to her parents and asked her if she'd be a part of the program, and she said she would. So it's going to be fun.
Do you have something coming up that you can tell us about your own performances?
On the 28th of February at mm-hmm. the Red Barn at the Ross Valley Players mm-hmm. and Art and Garden Center off of Sir Francis Drake. We're going to be doing a Cole Porter program from 8 to 9:30. Deborah Winters will be a part of it. Ross Gualco, Jeff Sanford. We've got a great lineup.
Harley
White, of course, is a fabulous bass player.
Okay, there is so much musical talent in the world. I've noticed that. I think more than in any other field.
And especially here in the Bay Area.
Well,
I think.
I mean, everywhere I've gone, I mean, you go to, there's so much of it. Yes, it seems like people would just really take to this.
Well, I think they'll enjoy it. It's the barn is a great place. It's been there 150 years. It's mostly theater, and they want to branch out to show that they do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be able to present this concert as a fundraiser for both the Cole Porter Society and for
okay,
the Ross
so
Valley
the
Players.
Cole, so the Cole Porter Society, everybody, which now that I'm listening to the two of you, is basically a scholarship program when you get right down to the core of it, with the goal of bringing back the kind of elegance and, as you say, literacy, to self-expression. Okay.
I'll write that down. I like it.
Very nice. Let's do that. So I want to ask the two of you something, because, Noah, the two love letters that you've done with me already, you've written love letters to some of your heroes. And I love that concept. And have you ever, because you're going to want to start archiving things yourself, right?
Yes.
I mean, as the two people who have founded this society, wouldn't it be nice if in your scrapbook, and I am just, you know, projecting my own little thing here, that there were letters from you to Cole Porter? I don't know. All those things become part of history. Every time there's good history learned, it's because somebody in 100 years has found letters, and it makes the front page, and it's critical. Go ahead.
What a wonderful idea.
Would you do that?
Particularly just having researched and feel, when you research them as much as I have, you feel like you know somebody.
That's right.
And you can actually write a personal letter and telling him how courageous he was, overcoming what he overcame, and that I wish that he were born in this era, because he would so much more be accepted.
Okay, so you're going to remember all this that you're saying. And I have another mm-hmm. thought, and which is, I'm big for collections of letters. When they're found, they are gold in handwriting.
Finding some Cole Porter letters. Wouldn't
that finding Cole Porter letters. But also, what about once every 6 months, one of you writes a love letter to him to let him know how you're progressing.
Once
a month, let him know which student has done what. It's a way of keeping a record of your own progress in this, in, I think, a really heart-ripping way. Really lovely.
Yeah.
That can also be part of our, we will be doing a monthly newsletter, and that can be part of the physical handwritten part in the back of the newsletter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Be gorgeous looking.
Right.
And you could invite people to write love letters to Cole Porter and then maybe put them on your website. If you have that much kind of, you could so involve the world in love letters to a man and an era.
Boy, I like that.
Well, Janet, we have a job for you.
All right, one. What is the?
Okay.
Yes, I mean, I think that would be just historically wonderful. Mm-hmm. You'll be gone, but somebody will find it. You know what this is? This is a concept I love, which is the definition of perfect faith being planting a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit.
Absolutely.
But you do it.
Absolutely.
Oh, I want to thank the two of you for doing this with me. This is so nice and so exciting to see something born.
Thank you.
Would you like to just, let's say the website one more time. It is www.noahgriffin, and that F is in Frank, griffin.com, and the Cole Porter world will pop up in front of you.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And
thank you.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Noah Griffin
and Meredith Browning
saying goodbye. And I just want to do my usual reminder with a slight twist that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion and is also your history documented in your own hand. And your story is as worth documenting as anybody else's. So I look forward to being part of this Cole Porter Society and meeting some of you there. Goodbye for now.